This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, I was somewhat amused to see that the famous anti-Semite Nick Fuentes has complained about being left off the list of nominees for anti-Semite of the year. And he feels quite insulted that he's been left off this list. Howard, I wonder if it's anything similar to you feeling insulted by being left off the list of nominees for Mampara of the Year.
Yes,
I don't know if it's
exactly.
I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, it depends how proud you are about that. So whereas I might be proud about being called the Mampara by the people calling me a Mampara, it says a fair amount about Nick, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And I mean, in this particular case, of course, the people who are nominating anti-Semite of the year are Jews. And so I think it comes from a relatively solid place, justifiable place. And Nick has said that he feels very insulted by not being nominated. Apparently, there was an explanation as to why he's been left off the list. He's been nominated before, and apparently you can't be nominated again once you've already been nominated once. So I think that the favorite for this year must be Tucker Carlson. I'm sure that she is that he is the most likely to winning the anti-Semite of the year. But onto something else, I saw an interesting article which speaks about the Hashmonaim Brigade, which is the ultra-Orthodox brigade in the IDF. And there was a comment that came out from soldiers of the Hashmonaim Brigade who've said that in the event that the government is able to reach some sort of an agreement with the rabbis, the powerful rabbis in the ultra-Orthodox community, that those soldiers who are currently serving in the brigade feel that it will open the floodgates for many, many ultra-Orthodox youth to join the IDF, which gives the impression that there's something of a pent-up demand or supply in this particular case of ultra-Orthodox youth who do want to serve in the IDF and who are waiting for the moment that their rabbis simply give them the green light to do so. They are people who would wish to serve but don't wish to alienate their community, and in particular, of course, the rabbis who are very, very powerful in those communities. So I found that to be an interesting comment, and even more places the responsibility on the leaders of those communities to say, we will essentially agree with the government proposals to allow the ultra-Orthodox youth to serve. I mean, one of the interesting demands that is being made of the ultra-Orthodox community is to require the IDF to assure them that those who enter the IDF as ultra-Orthodox soldiers will also leave the IDF as ultra-Orthodox soldiers. So there is this fear that they will lose their identification with the ultra-Orthodox community during the term of their service, even though that brigade is set up in order to accommodate everything that they need and in order to protect their values and in order to allow them their regular daily routines, whether it be praying or learning or whatever it is, alongside their service in the IDF. But apparently the leaders of the community are extremely concerned about losing people from their community once they go into the IDF and they potentially see a different way of lifestyle and a different way of doing things. And I just wonder whether that shows a weakness in that community or whether it is a strength in the community. And if that's the reason why they're preventing their youth from joining the army, then I think that this is something that really needs to be addressed. I don't know what you guys think about that, but there's clearly some sort of a threat that they feel about members of the community leaving the community as a result of seeing things in the IDF that they would otherwise not get to see. Interesting.
Let us know your thoughts. 0618951019. A female IDF soldier was lightly injured in a ramming attack. That was late yesterday. What happened?
Well, this was an attack, a ramming attack that took place in the area of Kiryat Arba. And we haven't received a lot of information about exactly what happened, whether this IDF soldier was on duty at one of the checkpoints and happened to be exposed and potentially then this car rammed her. Fortunately, she wasn't too seriously injured. She was lightly injured. She received medical treatment on location, and then she was ultimately taken to hospital where she seems to be doing okay. But the interesting thing is that the individual concerned then escaped, and he was set after by troops from the paratrooper brigade. And they eventually, a few hours later, managed to find him at another location. They tracked him down, still in his vehicle, and he apparently tried again to ram those soldiers who approached him. On this occasion, however, they were ready for this event, and he was eliminated, we are told, at the scene where he was apprehended in order to prevent any further injuries or deaths potentially to the IDF soldiers. So, again, this is something that has been praised by Hamas. It also comes after another incident took place on a highway where two civilians were traveling their car on the highway. On the highway number 5, and apparently some sort of an iron rod was hurled at the vehicle while they were traveling. The rod went through the windscreen, and yet miraculously neither of the two people who were sitting in the front seats were injured. One of them suffered from shock, as I'm sure you would when an iron rod comes through your windscreen when you're traveling at high speed. But miraculously, neither of them were injured. But again, it just goes to show that even in the most benign situations, I mean, that is not Gaza, that is not the borders, that is just simply traveling on a highway across Israel, going about your daily business without expecting anything like that. And then you get a rod hurled at your windscreen, or in the case of an IDF soldier standing guard near to Kiryat Arba. Admittedly, we know that there are communities around that area who are belligerent and potentially could try to cause harm. And I guess that that's why the IDF soldiers are standing guard at some of these junctions, because we know that events can take place there. But the point I'm trying to make is that even when you move yourself away from Gaza, you move yourself away from the Lebanese border or the Syrian border or even the Egyptian border and the Jordanian border, when you go about your business in places in central Israel, then unfortunately terror follows everybody all the time, and we all have to be very, very alert and ready for it. And then when you look and see what's happening in Gaza while our IDF soldiers continue to stand along the yellow line and we continue to wait for the return of the two hostages whose bodies still haven't been returned from Gaza and who were part of that agreement, the ceasefire agreement, we wait patiently for that to finish and to ultimately come to an end. We note that Shifa Hospital has unveiled a new maternity wing that has recently been reconstructed, even under the current conditions. Now, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. Clearly, Israel has to be involved and has to be part of that and has to allow those things to happen. And this is a piece of news that goes right under the radar. When there were attacks carried out at Shifa Hospital, which were justified because terror activities were being directed from Shifa Hospital, it was something of a terror base, not only in the hospital, but of course in the tunnels underneath. And any time there were attacks conducted against that hospital, it was all over the news. Now that a new wing has been unveiled and has been constructed and inaugurated, no news at all. Did anybody hear about that?
Not at all. And it's incredible that. Just amazing, because that's the focus, is rebuild and build for the future, actually.
Even under the current circumstances when the ceasefire conditions still haven't been fully met. So we're still effectively under a war situation, and yet that reconstruction process is going ahead quite rapidly.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. President Trump spoke to Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday. What do we know about this phone call?
Well, so yeah, of course, this is all very, very fascinating stuff, what's going on between these two leaders. But we understand that President Trump's main purpose for wanting to speak to the Prime Minister was to talk to him about Syria. And it comes on the back of that incident that we discussed yesterday about IDF soldiers going into Syria and arresting two people who were planning terror attacks against Israel. In the process, a major incident occurred because the soldiers were unexpectedly attacked. We will recall that, and that became something of an issue. And we understand that President Trump is right now very determined to rehabilitate the personality, the public relations persona that Syria has in the international community. The president is really doing whatever he can to try to somehow launder and clean up the image that Syria has, and any attacks that Israel carries out against Syria serve in some way to undermine his attempt to rehabilitate Syria's standing in the international community. And I think that really is why he called Prime Minister Netanyahu. Trump said he was, in inverted commas, very satisfied with Syria's current performance under the new president, Ahmed al-Shara. And of course, we know that al-Shara made a visit to the White House quite recently. So these are all parts of the president's attempt to somehow rehabilitate Syria's image in the international community, and he doesn't want Prime Minister Netanyahu and the IDF to in any way damage that. So I think that really was the main focus of President Trump's conversation. I think the Prime Minister, given the opportunity, mentioned the fact that he'd applied for this pardon and that he would welcome further support from President Trump. And we already spoke about some of the legal challenges in the Prime Minister's application for getting a pardon. But one of the things that is very interesting is, to what extent does President Trump's influence help or hinder this process? And where do we need to draw the lines for external intervention in our internal affairs? President Trump doesn't seem to have any red lines. He seems to think that it's okay for him to intervene in every single political process, wherever it is around the world, wherever he feels he personally or America might have some interest. He has no qualms in getting involved in supporting certain candidates, in castigating other candidates, in being highly critical, calling people stupid, calling people unworthy of their office, whatever it is. He gets very involved, and he doesn't seem to draw any red lines at all about getting involved in internal politics of other countries. And of course, that is the case here too. But I think that we need to somehow draw our red lines and say there is a moment beyond which others really don't have a say in what goes on in our country.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And finally, Israeli basketball player Deni Avdija, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, is currently ranked 40th in the NBA best player ratings. So what contributed to his season?
So Deni is really having an amazing season with the Portland Trail Blazers. And I know that basketball is not necessarily a sport that many South Africans like to follow. There's a lot of other sport, a good sport to follow besides that. But in Israel, basketball is a real thing. And it's one of the main sports that people like to follow alongside football. And Denny Avdia has come through the rankings, the ratings in Israeli basketball. He went on to the NBA. He's already had a few seasons in the NBA, some seasons a little bit more successful than others. But since joining the Portland Trailblazers, he has really, really stood out. And this season in particular has shown his skills. He's really strengthened in many of the areas that he was previously a little weaker. It seems like the coaching team and the surroundings in Portland are really helping his game. He's apparently connected very closely with the Jewish community in Portland, the Israeli community, many of whom like to come to watch the games of the Trailblazers. And even though Portland themselves have had a somewhat mixed season, Denny has really been an outstanding player for the Portland Trailblazers. And that's not a very easy thing to achieve for a foreign player like Denny coming from Israel, which is considered to be not necessarily one of the strongest schooling systems for basketball players. But I mean, we do obviously have a relatively good league here. And yet, when you go to the NBA, it's an entirely different business. So do watch out for Denny Avdia. He is really making waves in Portland. He's doing some great things. And to be 40th on the ratings that have been produced by one of the most respected sports websites, The Ringer, they've paid him tribute and ranked him number 40. And I think that is a great achievement for an Israeli player. And I think that Denny absolutely deserves it with the season that he's been having.
Incredible. That is where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning, 7:45, for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.